Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Bullets fly in Florida's capital city. Among the dead, a valiant Leon County Sheriff's deputy.
He loved his daughter, Gabby. He told me many times when he would talk about different things at work, he said, "Preacher, I'm going home with my daughter."
Also this week, yet another Florida Department of Corrections secretary says he's moving on.
The main problem at the Department of Corrections is that we have so much turnover, bad actors are able to realize that they can outlive their bosses. And so we've got to determine how to create more stability.
We'll also find out what kind of Florida impact President Obama's executive order on immigration may have, and we'll take in the season's most popular classic ballet. I'm Tom Flanagan, and welcome to Capitol Report. Usually after an election, Tallahassee turns into the sleepy southern town it really is. Political exhaustion prompts lots of people to take a few weeks off. And other than the cardiac arrests caused by the way Florida State University has so far won all its games this season, Florida's capital city has recently been a fairly sedate place. But that tranquility was shattered in the early morning hours of November 19th and again on November 22nd. Lynn Hatter reports those two tragedies, which left two people dead and several others hurt, have shaken the city to its core.
More than 2,000 people, hundreds of them first responders and law enforcement, crowded the expansive halls of Bradfordville First Baptist Church. In front of the pulpit, the flag-draped casket of Leon County Sheriff's Deputy Chris Smith. He was killed November 22nd as he and another deputy arrived to a house fire. That fire was intentionally set by a gunman with anti-government views who was known to local law enforcement officials. During a Monday night memorial service for Smith, Leon County Commission Chairwoman Marianne Lindley says the rainy weather reflects the sorrow of Tallahassee.
I think this rain really emphasizes how we all feel a great sorrow in our community. On Saturday morning, our whole community did suffer a tremendous loss when first responders, like they do every day, rushed towards danger while others sought safety. It's what heroes do, and we lost one that day.
Smith's death occurred just 2 days after a gunman walked onto Florida State University's campus and began shooting students in front of Strozier Library. Three people were injured, including 21-year-old Farhan Ahmed, who was struck 3 times. One bullet hit him in the spine, and he's now paralyzed from the waist down, says his sister Farhana Ahmed.
Ronnie was immediately... He immediately knew that something was wrong because one of the first bullets struck his spine, and it's left him paralyzed from the waist down. But despite his injuries, he's alive, and we're so grateful that he's here with us.
It's still a lot to take in, and many in the community are struggling to absorb it all. It's the kind of violence that seems to happen in bigger cities, those far away. It doesn't occur in Tallahassee, except now it has. And as Billy Graham ministry chaplain Kelly Burke points out, it hurts.
There's been a tear at the fabric of our society. There's been a shaking of our very foundation. But we are not without hope. And we are not hopeless. Nor are we helpless. In fact, it is in these dark times, it is in the storms of life, that character is built and molded.
Still, while rain may have marked the somber mood of Tallahassee, it's also come to symbolize something else, cleansing. And already many are starting to look ahead, regroup, and begin to reassess what being a part of a community really means. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Florida's Department of Corrections has a long and often troubled history. Persistent problems within the agency have led to a virtual revolving door in the secretary's office. The most recent resignation came this week, and Governor Rick Scott has yet to name a permanent successor. Meanwhile, as Sasha Cordner reports, a growing number of stakeholders, including advocacy groups and state lawmakers, want to see significant changes made starting with the 2015 lawmaking session.
Weeks ago, with rumors circulating that some agency heads may be looking to depart the Scott administration, Governor Rick Scott addressed the speculation.
You know, whenever there's the change of four years, you finish that. Some people decide to move on, and some people decide to stay. But as we have announcements, we'll make those.
Now, weeks later, Scott announced the first person to move on since his reelection is Florida Department of Corrections Secretary Mike Cruz. Cruz is calling it a retirement and plans to take another position in the criminal justice field. As the third prison chief named in the incumbent's first term, he did last the longest with close to 2 years on the job. His first predecessor, Ed Buss, was forced to resign in just months over a controversial prison privatization effort, and Ken Tucker, who left under much better circumstances, left after about a year. On the day of his appointment by Scott, Cruz said he hoped to bring stability and consistency to the agency.
If there's a group of people that deserve some consistency and some stability and some good news, it is the Florida Department of Corrections. The hardworking, dedicated that come to work and do their job every day, they do it the right way for the right reasons.
Under his leadership, the department worked to whittle down its deficit, and Cruz took charge of an effort to privatize the prison health care services, which led to several legal battles. But perhaps in the most recent months, things grew more intense as his agency came under scrutiny after a series of media reports detailed inmate abuse allegations and the agency's handling of the investigations, particularly after it came to light that an investigation into the death of a mentally ill inmate who died a gruesome death in a scalding hot shower is still ongoing after 2 years. Cruz started touring the state's correctional facilities, fired prison guards as well as some top officials, and was in the process of implementing a series of reforms. Those included creating a mental health care ombudsman, having the Florida Department of Law Enforcement investigate on natural deaths, and creating an inmate death website. In an earlier interview, he said his overall goal for all of these reforms is to be open and transparent and make sure the safety of everyone is paramount.
Part of that is doing the right thing. And the right thing is when we've got bad seeds, we're not going to sweep it under the rug. Someone that does that, that pushes it aside or says, you know what, we're not going to take any action on this, they're just as guilty as the person that did it, in my book. And as we've gone around this state for the last several months, what we've impressed upon our leadership teams at all 49 of our institutions I've been to is that, yes, we expect and have high expectations for how we're going to conduct ourselves as an agency and as members of this agency.
I think that Secretary Cruz is somebody who truly wanted to change the department, but it's like moving an aircraft carrier. It takes a long time because it's a huge bureaucracy, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but it takes time to change the culture.
That's Barney Bishop, the CEO of the Florida Smart Justice Alliance, who says he's sad the department is losing a good man. Bishop recently worked with Cruz and other state officials on a prison reform initiative that allows released inmates get an ID card to help them successfully re-enter society and reduce the recidivism rate or the chance they'll come back to prison. And he hopes to build on those efforts again this year. Bishop says he's willing to work with the new secretary on these initiatives. Still, while he believes most correctional officers are good people, he says the new head has to be strong enough to clean up the culture. And that's something that may be looked at in 2015. Fort Walton Beach Republican Representative Matt Gaetz chaired the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee under former House Speaker Will Weatherford.
Well, it's important to confront the reality that the Department of Corrections has had generational challenges, you know, dating back to Governor Askew's time in office. The main problem at the Department of Corrections is that we have so much turnover, bad actors are able to realize that they can outlive their bosses in their professional careers. And so we've got to determine how to create more stability in that agency. And just as a state, we cannot allow a system to continue that doesn't protect those that are in our custody.
That That was also part of a report by a Florida State University think tank called Project on Accountable Justice. It talks about how, including Cruz, there have been six secretaries appointed over an eight-year period. PAJ Director Deborah Brodsky says the goal is to help launch a discussion about bettering the correction system.
The agency secretary is such a critical position. We thought that providing some options for consideration would be helpful. One way to do that would be to sort of decouple that position with the actual term of the governor by extending it to 5 years, providing conditional review and recommendations for this seating as this position from an oversight body that is broader than just the governor's office.
We need to take a hard look at the prison system.
For the past 2 years, Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley was charged with leading the Senate's criminal justice budget panel. He says he's looked at the PAJ's report, and with recent events in mind, the prison system has been on the brain.
I'm certainly deeply concerned about the events that we've learned have occurred at some of the facilities around the state. And so I'm very interested in having a robust discussion with the leaders of the Department of Corrections about where we go from here.
And as former vice chair and newly elected Senate Democratic leader Athenia Joyner agrees.
We've got to reform our prison system, without a doubt. It's apparent that there are problems. People are dying needlessly incarcerated in this state, and we're going to get it right.
For now, Governor Scott has not named a permanent agency head, so Cruz's interim replacement is Tim Cannon, a deputy secretary. His first day is December 1st. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kordner.
Key Largo Representative Holly Rashon has filed a bill that would add protections for gay and transgender people in Florida's anti-discrimination law. The Florida Competitive Workforce Act will be heard during the 2015 legislative session. It's already illegal to discriminate on the basis of race, religion, sex, national origin, physical handicap, or marital status. The LGBT community, though, isn't covered under state protections when it comes to employment and housing. The bipartisan bill is seen as a win by business leaders who believe it will give the state a stronger competitive foothold in a society where alternative lifestyles are becoming widely accepted. The bill's being celebrated by Florida Businesses for a Competitive Workforce. That's a coalition of 21 major Florida employers. The group includes giant job creators like Darden Restaurants, Florida Blue, the Marriott Hotel Chain, Raymond James, and Tech Data. Also involved are Walt Disney World Resorts, Wells Fargo, and Winn-Dixie. Still to come on Capitol Report, some are saying the president's actions on immigration policy could have a big impact on the local level.
I was starting to lose faith lately, but I'm glad I did not lose it. So I'm hopeful.
Holiday sales are expected to grow this year thanks to an extended shopping season and cooler weather.
The Florida Retail Federation is predicting this year about a 5% increase over last year.
And we'll delve into an artistic holiday tradition that has been firing the imaginations of little ballerinas for more than a century.
Well, sugar plum is like the role that like every prima ballerina aspires to be. And like I wasn't expecting to get it.
With President Barack Obama's announcement of an executive order on immigration receding in the rearview mirror, it's worth asking what his action will mean for the Tallahassee community. As Nick Evans reports, the impact could be far broader than one might imagine.
Think of an illegal immigrant. For many, the image that comes to mind is someone with brown skin, someone from a Latin American country. Too often, the rhetorical clamor surrounding illegal immigration in the U.S. reduces it to a problem along America's southern border. But U.S. immigration is far more varied. With Mr. Obama's newly introduced policy to expand a program of deferred action for parents of citizens, the face of immigration is likely to become many faces. as people from different places and walks of life come forward.
We would be extremely relieved. The idea of not living in the shadow anymore. And
this is Ada. She's from Albania, and she and her husband have been living in the U.S. for over a decade. A few years ago, the Labor Department approved their visa renewal, but immigration didn't. They have twins, two boys, and Ada says they love to play soccer. The boys were born here, and they've never known another home. Aside from their papers, Ada's family is just like many others in the Tallahassee area. But Ada says those papers do make a huge difference.
Issues like the driver's licenses, this whole situation, financial laws, I need to emphasize that. It puts a lot of pressure on a relationship as well, I'd say. So, yes, it's a big relief.
As Ada is speaking, this idea of relief keeps coming up. She says being able to work and study without worrying about deportation is a huge weight off her shoulders. And it's not like she's got nothing to offer.
I would like to study paralegal. And also, I'm thinking, I'm very fluent in Italian, German. Of course, Albanian is my mother language. And I think I got a handle of English. So I'm thinking about doing translations, hopefully, in the future. And being an interpreter, that's always been my dream. And I have never been able to do that, I mean, under the circumstances during the past few years.
You may not realize when you go to restaurants or hotels or schools, a lot of the people there are living in the shadows. They don't.
Elizabeth Ritchie is a Tallahassee immigration lawyer handling Ada's case, and she thinks there are many people just like Ada who will benefit from Mr. Obama's executive action.
And we're going to see hundreds, if not a few thousand, families locally affected, and about 4.5 million families nationwide.
Probably the thing Ada is most excited about is the prospect of visiting Albania. She explains that even though her family's whole life is here, if they leave, they won't be allowed to return.
I haven't seen my parents, my sisters in 12 years, my husband. It's the same story with him. He's an only son, and their parents, his parents, haven't seen the grandchildren. So I'm getting emotional, but that's a reality. I mean, every Christmas, every Thanksgiving, every birthday party we have, I mean, we get nostalgic. And
Ada hopes sometime in the next 2 years, she and her family will be able to get the authorization to travel abroad. And while she and Ritchie know permanent residency or even citizenship is still a long way off, they're very encouraged by this first step. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
The state's retailers are expecting a jolly good holiday shopping season. The Florida Retail Federation is predicting a 5% sales increase over last year. And Regan McCarthy reports experts say that's thanks to an extended shopping season and more tourists.
Some people prefer to wait until after Thanksgiving to start Christmas celebrations. But in Tallahassee's Governor Square Mall, the celebration is in full swing. Giant red ornaments hang from the ceiling. A sign proclaims Santa will return for photos after he finishes feeding the reindeer. And the song Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer is piped in over the mall's speakers. But as for me and Grandpa, we believe. There are just a few weeks worth of shopping days left before Christmas.
How many weekends is that? Not very many. And so how many paychecks is that for those trying to buy Christmas from a cash flow standpoint? Not many paychecks left.
That's Florida Retail Federation President Rick McAllister. Early Christmas celebrations have been getting national pushback from shoppers and the media, like these NBC News reporters who say Black Friday was one thing.
But the event is becoming so ubiquitous, that the event is becoming so long.
Yes.
That the
That's what I'm saying. It's a weekend. That's why I won't
say. But McAllister says retailers wouldn't offer the sales if consumers didn't want them.
Retailers are not leading the consumer here. The consumers are leading the retailers. So if people don't show up on Thanksgiving Day, and no one's making them shop, that's for sure, then they won't be there. They won't open.
McAllister says extended sales let consumers spread out their purchases, letting them buy more in the long run. He says that's part of what's expected to boost sales this holiday season, And that's a good thing for the state government, which gets a big chunk of its revenue from sales tax. And now that online shopping giant Amazon is charging Floridian sales tax, McAllister says the state is expected to see an even bigger boost.
And this year, for the first time, Amazon, who now has several distribution centers located in Florida, we like that, they brought jobs to Florida, will be collecting sales taxes from Floridians who owe them. We're anticipating that to be around an $80 million increase in sales tax collections for the state of Florida.
More than 50% of shoppers are expected to make some online purchases this holiday season. Another reason Florida's expecting bigger sales numbers stems from expectations for more holiday visitors this year. Visit Florida Marketing Director Paul Phipps says that's thanks in part to Mother Nature. He says last year the polar vortex chased visitors to Florida.
So many of those people shared socially about that experience and what, you know, how much they enjoyed it. And I think you will see this year, I think, even greater numbers because people start to plan. And they've heard for, you know, a good several months that this was going to be a hard winter.
And Phipps says that bodes well for retailers.
You know, a third of people, the domestic travelers that come here, a third of them, you know, shopping is an important part of what they do.
And one more expected positive is an increase in seasonal jobs for holiday workers. According to data from the Department of Economic Opportunity, the average seasonal hiring for the past 4 years has been around 60,000 retail jobs. And experts say often those can turn into permanent positions. McAllister says that's all proof Florida is in store for a good holiday season. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Governor Rick Scott exchanged emails dealing with vetoes, the state budget, and his speeches from a private email account. That's according to records turned over to the Associated Press this past week. Scott has previously said he used a Google email account to communicate with his family and not for state business. He also said that if he ever got an email dealing with state business, he would forward it to his public email accounts. John Tupps, a spokesperson for the governor, however, acknowledged in a statement that after a thorough review of this old email account, there were occasions the governor failed to forward messages. This email account, he added, is closed, and the personal email account the governor uses now has not been given out beyond his family. The Scott administration turned over the emails more than 3 months after the Associated Press first asked for them. Most of the emails appear to be from 2011 and 2012, although there are also some from 2013. Now, it's not a violation of law to have a private email account, but it would be a violation if someone asked for emails and the governor's office failed to turn them over. Scott's Google email account has been at the center of an ongoing lawsuit filed against the governor by a Tallahassee attorney who's a frequent critic of the Republican governor. You're listening to Capitol Report on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, there are just some elements of the year-end holidays that even transcend the word tradition. These have become so tightly tied to the season that it's nearly unimaginable that this time of year could go by without them. Such as the immortal Tchaikovsky Ballet, the Nutcracker Suite. From member station WQCS in Fort Pierce, Joe Roberts takes a look at this enduring cultural phenomena.
It's going on right now across the nation. In dance studios and theaters from New York City to Stuart, Florida, Clara Drosselmeyer and a host of dancers from around the world are getting ready to perform the Christmas classic, The Nutcracker.
Ready? Right leg first. Right, left, right. And
girls in leotards, their hair wound into tight buns on the top of their heads, twirl in their ballet slippers at the Florida Arts and Dance Company in Stuart. They've been working since August on this performance, which is now just weeks away.
They're doing good. They did most of all by themselves, so they should be good to go in another 2 weeks to be ready for stage.
Dominique Shepherd is a dance instructor. She helps lead the youngsters through their steps. It's been months of hard work, but she says fun, too.
We always have to stop them from having a little bit too much fun so they get back to dancing. But, yeah, all in all, they're having a good time.
It's 11-year-old Aubrey Corkum's first Nutcracker, and she's been working hard.
I have to learn marching and classical.
Is it hard stuff to remember?
Yes, it's a little bit hard.
She says she keeps pictures in her head to remember her steps. 10-year-old Savannah McEninley has been a gymnast but decided to switch to dance this fall. She'll be a doll in the battle scene and marzipan. She also has a method for remembering her steps.
I count the music a lot, and I look at, like, I memorize, like, what I'm doing, and then I look at, like, visual pictures.
For these two dancers, it'll be their first Nutcracker, but not for 16-year-old Shelby Tremblay. She's been dancing since she was 2 and a half, and this year she has the plum role. Literally, the sugar plum fairy.
Well, sugar plum is like the role that like every prima ballerina aspires to be. And like I wasn't expecting to get it, but when they said that I got the role, I was very excited at first, and it's just been a rocky road, and now that we're finally hitting the stage soon, I'm feeling more confident with it.
For some dancers, this may be their only time on stage. For others, it could be the start of a tradition. It was for Mina Hamilton. She's been dancing for 24 years. She knows the time commitment it takes to make this production work, and that's taken into consideration when dancers audition.
Just because they dance beautifully doesn't always mean that they're going to get the lead role, because if they aren't committed, if they aren't going to take safety precautions, because putting together a performance then takes another probably 50 hours of rehearsal.
With that kind of time commitment, it's a good thing Thompson's husband and son are also involved. You won't see her on stage during this production, but you will see her vision of the story.
It's really just how you envision the story is how you really put your own touch, because Spanish has to have flair. Certain dances, Chinese has to have sharpness and petite. And so some of the dances, even though you're putting your own spin and flair, it's really how you take the storyline.
And so each production may vary a bit from year to year as the tradition, which is the Nutcracker, plays out in theaters, large and small, to kick off the Christmas season. This is Jill Roberts in Fort Pierce.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Corner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Nick Evans. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol. Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.